Good morning. It's 8:06. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta. It's Thursday, December 26th, and also Boxing Day. Currently sitting around 20 degrees in the Wasatch Back in Park City and Heber, and the snow has really started to dump over the last hour, especially here in Old Town. On the line with me, I've got ABC4 meteorologist Nate Larson. Nate, what can we expect these next few days?
Hey, so it's actually Seth Sanders. I'm filling in for Nate. He's enjoying time with his family. No, it's okay. So, yeah, it is snowing. It should clear on out here in the next hour or two. But then we do have another wave that's set to impact us this evening, this afternoon, probably around 3, 4 o'clock is when we're going to start to see it impact the Wasatch Back, bringing a little bit more snow. And we talked about the atmospheric river. I heard it on the radio just a second ago. The track that the atmospheric river is taking is through the Sierra Nevadas. So we're not going to get hit quite as hard as they are on the West Coast. A lot of the mountains are going to eat that moisture up, but there still is going to be a decent amount of snow. And that's going to hold on for a while. So for today, Park City is getting about 1 to 2 inches. And then overnight with that second wave, another 2 to 4 inches is going to be possible. So a total of about 3 to 6 inches by the end of today. And then tomorrow we have more snow before about 2 o'clock. And then it could be a rain snow mix, but it's mostly going to be snow. The high today and tomorrow is going to be 38 degrees with an overnight low in the 20s with the heaviest snow with second wave right about 4 or 5 o'clock. And then by your, Friday, we're looking at a couple rain and snow showers. It turns to snow Friday night, drops back down to 22, and more rain and snow showers for your Saturday and your Sunday. And then we have a chance of snow on Monday. So we have a whole lot going on there. Tomorrow, you're getting another 2 to 4 inches, another 1 to 2 inches for your Saturday. So when all is said and done, Park City could have a total of about 4 to 8 inches approximately by the end of this weekend.
We'll take it, Seth. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. Drive safe out there, guys.
It's 8:09 now. On the line with me, I've got Trent with an update from the Utah Avalanche Center.
Hey, good morning. yeah, it's just starting to snow out there, as you just heard. And, you know, the temperatures up at the mountains right now are cold, 15 to 21 degrees. The winds have picked up out of the southwest, blowing 10 to 15 miles per hour, gusting into the 20s along that Park City ridgeline. In the past 48 hours, we've seen roughly 2 to 5 inches of snow up in the mountains. We're going to see another 2 to 5 today. And then, as you heard in the weather forecast, lots of snow now through the weekend. And, you know, the Avalanche Center, we have issued an avalanche watch. And what this means is that we expect within about 24 hours, we're going to create very dangerous avalanche conditions. And the avalanche watch will switch into an avalanche warning. And really, that's because of heavy snowfall and drifting by strong winds will elevate the backcountry avalanche danger over the next several days. We are going to have very dangerous conditions, and high avalanche danger is expected to develop in many areas, especially northern Utah. So this would include, you know, Ogden, Salt Lake, Provo, Uintas, and then up in Logan. We'll see if the storm track pushes enough snow down into the middle part of the state. And if that's the case, we'll even see the Manti skyline jump in on an avalanche warning as well. And, you know, really the reason why is because we have all of this weak, faceted, sugary, just crap snow everywhere that's going to create a weak layer. And all we've been missing is a slab put over the top of that weak layer. And this new storm snow is going to give us that slab. So new snow, strong winds, it'll overload this persistent weak layer that we basically have everywhere in northern Utah. So yeah, not the best news. And today, as we build that slab, we're going to have a rising avalanche danger. I would definitely avoid slopes steeper than 30 degrees. And don't be on or underneath any slopes steeper than 30 degrees. And really, in summary, this morning, the avalanche danger is moderate, but it's going to quickly rise to considerable, especially across those upper elevation slopes, shady slopes that are facing northwest, north, northeast, and east, where it'll become likely for humans to trigger an avalanche 1 to 3 feet deep, felling on a persistent weak layer of faceted snow. And just one thing I'd like to add the closing here is this weak layer, this faceted snow, in fact, is responsible for roughly about 70% of all avalanche fatalities out there. So yeah, no good news for northern Utah. It's going to be dangerous. Help us share the word.
Yeah, and Trent, just to remind folks, where's the best place to go just to get the most up-to-date information as the storm develops?
Oh, perfect. Lovely. Yeah, utahavalanchecenter.org.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a good one.
Thank you.
It's 8:12. Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta. Coming up, Park City native and singer-songwriter Jack Wakely will give us a sample of his music and preview upcoming local shows. And Heber resident Jake Harvath will talk about his 14-month journey across the U.S. on horseback to shed light on the plight of wild Mustangs in the American West. After that, stay tuned for Cool Science Radio at 9. On this final Thursday of 2024, Katie Mullally and Lynn Ware Peak look back at the year in science and share favorite interviews of the year, first with Nadina Gale, 2024 National Geographic Explorer, who discusses the nature of our cities, harnessing the power of the natural world to survive a changing planet. Then Daniel Brooks, a professor emeritus from the University of Toronto, and Salvatore Augusta, an associate professor at Virginia Commonwealth University, talk about their new book, The Darwinian Survival Guide, Hope for the 21st Century. That's all coming up. Did want to give a brief traffic report. We have seen several crashes, likely due to the snow this morning. I saw one reported on westbound US 40, right there near Jordanelle State Park, kind of near the dam that's heading towards Park City. And then also numerous crashes. I've seen at least two reported in Parley's Canyon, eastbound I-80, so heading up towards Park City. Looks clean if you're heading down to Salt Lake, but two crashes reported, one at Mountain Dell, one closer to the mouth of the canyon, and then just also seeing some congestion around the Summit Park area for those drivers heading east. Be right back with more after this. It is 8:15 now, getting into some local news. After the Wasatch County School District announced its new school will be named Iron Horse High School, some families are unhappy with how the decision was handled. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports on that.
The announcement of the new high school's name and mascot came at the school board meeting December 18th after a presentation from Texas-based branding experts. An official vote wasn't on the agenda, just the presentation by the branding consultants. Still, the board decided on and announced the Iron Horse name that evening. Utah's Open and Public Meetings Act states that a public body cannot take final action on a topic unless it's listed as an agenda item and the public is notified. Now, a petition circulating through the community is demanding the board hold a new vote on the high school's name and give the public adequate notice. A Wasatch County School District spokesperson was unavailable for comment Tuesday. At the meeting earlier this month, Wasatch High School Principal Justin Kelly, who has been tapped to lead the new school, said he thought Iron Horse High School was a stronger name than the alternatives, Deer Creek High School or Northfields High School.
This name is different than anything else. Something we can kind of put the heart and soul into, Iron Horse. Could have I done it with Northfields? Yeah, I could have. Could have I done it with Deer Creek? Yeah, I could have. But not the same way.
But when the announcement was shared with district families, not everyone shared his enthusiasm. Lynn Allred says she has three children yet to attend high school in Wasatch County. She started a petition to ask the school board to reconsider its decision.
Some people think that it's not a big deal, but I do think it's a big deal. And then I know for my kids, it's a big deal for them to look forward to a school that they can be proud of and not just go begrudgingly as they're getting ripped away from the school that they thought they'd be at.
She says she filled out naming surveys shared by the district, but she doesn't feel district leaders valued families' opinions. She says she wants them to respect the majority vote.
And then after watching the meeting and seeing some of the things that went down there, I felt like there was complete disregard for the community's input. These are elected officials at the school board that are supposed to have the community in mind, and they went with a decision that was pushed through on a very quick basis that wasn't supposed to happen that night.
She says when she watched the meeting, she felt like some of the school board members were pressured to agree.
I think it says more than just about the school. I think it says that our elected officials aren't listening.
And Troy Finlayson, whose family lives in Midway, says he doesn't think the community will rally behind a train mascot.
We could be the Cowboys, the Wranglers, all kinds of stuff like that. Just things that kind of represent our community.
He says he watched the school board meeting and wasn't impressed by how the board made its decision. Over 550 people had signed the petition for a new vote on the high school's name as of Tuesday afternoon. Wasatch County's second high school will welcome students for the 2026-2027 school year. It's under construction just west of downtown Heber. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
It's 8:18 now, getting back into some local news. The head of Park City Mountain says the resort will remain open if ski patrollers move to strike during the peak of the holiday season. Park City Mountain Vice President and Chief Operating Officer Deidre Walsh told KPCW they are committed to staying open amid prolonged contract negotiations with the resort's ski patrol union.
We agreed to the patrol union's request to schedule mediation this week. However, the union has continued to state that they may call a strike at any time, including in advance of mediation. If the union takes that drastic action, Park City Mountain will remain open to serve our employees, our guests, and the community.
The union, which represents over 200 ski patrollers and safety staff at Park City Mountain, voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike earlier this month. Union business manager Margot Klingensmith said the resort could create safety risks if it brings in replacement patrollers if the group decides to strike.
You know, it's hard to say the full impact, but what I can say is that it takes our new hires pretty much the entire season to learn the mountain. It would be incredibly difficult for someone to learn that quickly.
Walsh with Park City Mountain said a plan is in place to operate the resort if union members move to strike.
If necessary, we are prepared to deploy our patrol support team, which consists of experienced patrollers from Park City Mountain and our other mountain resorts. We are proud of this team's deep skills, certifications, and professionalism. Patrol support team members are provided with training and resources for the terrain area they are assigned. In addition, we have two on-site medical clinics. Safety is always our number one priority.
The union has been posting on social media asking would-be strike breakers, sometimes called scabs, not to cross picket lines. Klingensmith said they're asking employees to side with them amid ongoing negotiations.
If we are forced to strike, it's not too late to stand with your fellow patrollers and our families and the community we care deeply about and choose not to scab.
Union members and resort leadership are scheduled to hold a mediation session today. The two parties have been negotiating since the last contract expired in April. The parties reached a tentative agreement on education and training packages last week, but continue to haggle over wages. The union wants Park City Mountain owner Vail Resorts to raise the patrollers' base wage from $21 to $23 per hour across all resorts to adjust for nationwide inflation. The group also wants Vail to increase compensation for more experienced patrollers. According to Park City Mountain, patrol wages have increased more than 50% over the past four seasons, outpacing inflation. The union has also filed unfair labor practice complaints against Vail with the National Labor Relations Board over delays in negotiations. Be right back after this. It's 8:22 now, jumping back into some news. The Wasatch County Sheriff's Office has arrested a man they say pulled the trigger in a deadly shooting near Jordanelle State Park in September. Grace Dorfler reports on that.
A man was arrested Monday but not charged, according to court documents. Deputies say he admitted to fatally shooting 61-year-old Patrick Hayes in a road rage incident September 25th, telling investigators he acted in self-defense. An arrest affidavit says investigators detained and questioned the man in mid-November, though no arrest was made at the time. During that interview, the man allegedly admitted he shot Hayes and buried the gun near his home. The affidavit says the man was arrested on suspicion of obstructing justice because he allegedly tried to hide the weapon used in the shooting, a .45 caliber Kimber 1911. According to the affidavit, investigators used camera footage from the Ross Creek entrance of Jordanelle State Park and tracking data from cell towers to find the man arrested Monday. On the night of the fatal shooting, investigators say the video shows the man pulled up in a Jeep Gladiator behind Hayes at around 11 p.m. They say the footage shows Hayes got out of his car and was standing near the passenger side of the Jeep when he was shot. According to a November press release from the sheriff's office, Hayes allegedly approached the Jeep holding a metal baton and a pocket knife. After the shooting, investigators say the driver of the Jeep fled the scene. No report was made to law enforcement until about 12 hours later, when a passerby found Hayes' body on the side of the road. His car was still running with the driver's door open and blinkers flashing. Last month, sheriff's deputies said they were considering all possible crimes, including homicide, and considering all defenses, including self-defense. The suspect arrested Monday had not been charged as of Tuesday morning. It's not clear if he'll be charged in connection with the fatal shooting. The man is being held without bail in the Wasatch County Jail. The Wasatch County Sheriff's Office said Tuesday deputies plan to meet with prosecutors and the Hayes family December 26th. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
It's 8:24 now. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta. Getting reports of a car broken down on the 80 off-ramp there in Kimball Junction. Here and there's some police there, and just to expect some delays if you are on 80 trying to get off there at Kimball Junction. Was earlier reported some crashes in Parley's Canyon, still seeing some congestion there around Mountain Dell heading up from Salt Lake City, and also seeing some congestion in the Summit Park area for those eastbound drivers on I-80, looking smooth sailing if you're heading down into the Salt Lake Valley. Seeing a little bit of congestion there on 248 heading into Park City. And then there was also that crash that was reported on Highway 40 near the Jordanelle Dam, but not looking like it's causing too much congestion there. But otherwise, hope you all are driving safe. The snow is really continuing to dump here in Old Town. We are struggling to reach Heber City Police Chief Parker Sever, so we will be jumping to our second interview after this message. I'm KBCW's Parker Malatesta. You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm joined in studio now by Southern California-based musician Jack Wakely. How's it going today, Jack?
It's good, man. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Didn't want to shy away from the fact that you are from here in Park City and are playing some shows here locally here soon. But tell the audience a bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I actually grew up here in Park City, Utah, and always loved music. Started playing music when I was a little kid. When I was 5 years old, I begged my parents for a guitar. And I just started writing songs when I was really young. And after a while, ended up in Berklee College of Music and studied out there. Cool. Kind of, you know, met a good friend group, and then we all moved over to LA together. And just been out there kind of plugging away, just finding my sound, so to speak. It took me a long time to kind of pinpoint exactly what I wanted to do with mm-hmm. recording. But honestly, in the last like year and a half, 2 years, I found it. And it was like a really exciting moment to kind of like feel all the pieces come together. And then, yeah, finished recording my first record and released that earlier this year, in July.
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, you developed a love for music at a young age. Where was the point in life where it kind of blossomed and you're like, this is the career for me?
I mean, honestly, like I was begging my parents for a guitar when I was really young. So I think even then, like, I wanted to be a singer. I wanted to be a front man of a group, even when I was like a little kid. And I think I kind of always knew that. I know that's kind of rare, but you know, it started out being like a cute thing. People were like, mm-hmm. oh, that's so cute. And then as I got a little bit older, it was like, oh, he's actually serious about that. And you know, and then I don't think there was ever really a doubt for me personally about it. I just love it so much.
Yeah. So you're a one-man show?
Yeah, so, I mean, well, I have a backing behind mm-hmm. me. My brother actually does the drums, which is really cool. He also went to Berklee. Fantastic cool. drummer. And then Mitch, who actually works at this radio station, he'll do bass with me whenever he can. So he'll fly out to LA, do shows with me, which is really awesome. And I'll usually do it with those two. If I can get a synth player in, it's great too, because there's lots of synths in the track. But if not, we'll just, you know, pump some synths through the PA and then have them just do the rhythm section stuff. Yeah, and that's kind of what it's become. I've played in a lot of bands over the years, but it kind of just came to the point where I was like, oh, I need like a lot of creative control over these songs. So I just ended up doing it just by myself eventually.
How would you describe your brand of music? What were some major influences in terms of artists?
I would say, so when I was really little, it was the dad music. It was like, you know, my dad's introducing me to the Beatles and Zeppelin and Bob Dylan and Neil Young. And so it's kind of like the rock and folk end of the 70s and the 60s. And that was like where it started. And then as I sort of started to form my own taste, it was that kind of indie sleaze, indie pop, indie rock stuff that was happening in the late 2000s, early 2010s with mm-hmm. MGMT, Cage the Elephant, Unknown Mortal Orchestra, groups like that. And I still take a lot of inspiration from those groups. I really love their sound. So I go for something that's kind of in that vein, like in the indie vein. But I really do, I want to write like pop songs. You know, I want to write something that's like really like hooky and catches your ear. But still has like a lot of character, a lot of texture. There's a lot of ambient sounds in there too. Yeah, and you know, I also had my jazz boy phase in high school.
We all do.
Yeah, we had the whole jazz era. And then going to Berklee, of course, there's a lot of jazz going on there. But as I, you know, as I got kind of into the jazz thing at Berklee, I realized that I didn't really love the scene as much as I loved the music. Nothing against people who love jazz music or anything, but it was just, I connected a lot more with like the rock scene there. So was in a rock band for a while out there, had a really good time with those guys. And so yeah, there's like all those influences have kind of like blended over time to make what I have now.
Yeah, we want to cut away so people can hear a sample. What do you want to play for the audience?
Let's do a song called Please Come Back. It's the first song on the record.
Small details in your eyes, in your eyes. Time flies, suddenly our path starts looking like a white. I don't know why.
Jack, what do you want to tell people about that track and how it was made?
Well, that track was kind of the one that like found its stride first in the record. Wrote it quite a while ago, actually. I probably wrote that song like 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And it went through a bunch of different versions. I was playing it in the rock band that I was in college, and it was a lot different then. It was like really heavy, and it was just trying to fit into the vibe of a rock band, which is really fun, but it's not necessarily like what I had envisioned the song to be. So eventually I, like, you know, the band sort of ended, and then I took that song and I started recording it and sort of, you know, finding each individual part, each sound, and kind of trying to decide what a guitar was going to sound like for the rest of the record, what a synth was going to sound like for the rest of the record, like just being very particular about it beforehand. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so this song, I spent like way too long on it, and it was actually probably the one that like taught me like that I have to like stop myself. You know, I think a lot of artists go through that where they're like, they just don't know when to end.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
So that was a big learning process. But then I really liked the way it turned out. I thought that it kind of like encapsulated what I was trying to get across. And yeah, it was that one.
Yeah. And of course, want to mention you've got two shows coming up here in Park City. Where and when?
Yeah, so I got the Canyons Village, the main stage over at the base of the Canyon Ski Resort. That's going to be on the 27th, so that's this Friday, and that's going to be 4 to 6 p.m., and we're going to be doing mostly covers on that show. It's mostly just to entertain the skiers and stuff coming off the hill. Might throw in a few originals in there, but then the next show is going to be the 2nd of January at the Urban Lounge, Salt Lake City, and that's going to be just all the record, all my stuff. Oh, yeah, I didn't say the Urban Lounge is 8 p.m.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, we've been speaking with musician Jack Wakely, who grew up here in Park City, is now out in Los Angeles. Jack, I assume moving to SoCal does a lot just to help you make it in the music business.
Yeah, it's as far as like connecting,
yeah,
it's really,
networking,
really important. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I do have a lot of family out there currently living in Pasadena, and it's like all of my, like, you know, like a bunch of cousins and aunts and uncles and grandma, and my mom's actually moving there next month. And so it's the whole family. And that's been really huge, because I know it's like, it's a big scary leap to go there. So they kind of helped pad that, and then got out there. A lot of my Berkeley buddies were out there, and we were first working together, and then we kind of all went our separate ways, started having our own projects, and also have another project that I'm working on, which is like a folk project that I'll eventually announce, which is really fun with a buddy of mine. But it's been really, it was a little scary at first, you know, because it's like it's such a big city. You're like, where do I fit in all of this? Everybody's trying to do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be like a sycophant and like showing up to parties and like trying to do the like social climber thing. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of have to, like, you know, I'm just trying to be myself and trying to make friends out there with people who I actually like want to spend time with and want to work with. And I think now I've lived there now for like 3 or 4 years, and now I've finally sort of found my little crowd of people and my little niche, and living in a better place than when I first got there. At first I was living in like the valley in the thick of it, just like constant noise, and like recording was such a pain, just like always having to restart because there's an engine revving or a dog barking or people screaming. And so now I'm living in like a nice house in Pasadena with my brother and my girlfriend, and it's really, really nice.
Finally, Jack, I just wanted to ask, what are some things you've listened to recently that you really like, or bands that are, you know, have caught your eye?
I'm kind of all over the place recently, man. I had like a big Smiths era this year. I don't know why I like never really listened to the Smiths until really recently, but I bought a Fender Jaguar earlier this year and was just looking up like influential guitar players who play the Fender Jag, and I saw Johnny Marr and I was like, oh my God, like how have I not listened to this guy? Totally fell in love with their music, had like a huge, huge Smiths era. Yeah, I listened to another artist, McGee, who's like a really, really cool indie artist, very like kind of like almost industrial, kind of stripped down, very unique sounds, which is really inspiring to hear an artist like that. I know that's what he was going for, I heard, is like something like never heard of before. Mm-hmm. So that's really inspiring. I like to hear artists that are like in the vein of like the indie world, even if it's like old or new, but something that's like just really, really unique. I'm trying to get there. I don't know if I'm quite there yet, but yeah, I'm trying to do something that feels familiar in the sense that you could just catch on to the melody right away, but you haven't heard the exact like kind of texture the track has in any other project. So yeah, I'd say those are like two huge artists that like struck me this year.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with musician Jack Wakely, who's got several local shows coming up here. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta.
It's 8:41 now. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. Mike Kennedy will be sworn in as Utah's newest member of Congress in January, succeeding John Curtis in the U.S. House of Representatives. Kennedy recently met with Park City officials. The Republican congressman-elect briefly introduced himself to the Park City Council during its last meeting of 2024. In the U.S. House, Kennedy will represent Utah's 3rd Congressional District, which spans the state's eastern side from Park City to the Arizona border. While meeting with Park City's leaders last week, Kennedy was not shy about political differences.
But I really enjoy divergent opinions. I enjoy building consensus, and I want to know what I can do to serve you. Even though I gather the possibility, I mean, I hope I'm wrong, that many of you didn't vote for me, and maybe next time around you won't vote for me again.
The Republican was an enthusiastic supporter of President-elect Donald Trump on the campaign trail. Compare that to Summit County, where Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris received the largest share of votes of any county in Utah. But the former state lawmaker told the Park City Council they should focus on what unites them, like funding for the 2034 Winter Olympics in Utah. Kennedy, a Utah County physician, said he's eager to work with state and federal officials to help bring Park City money for infrastructure projects.
And I'm very happy to be your advocate to fight for every dime that I can bring to this place to build the things that we'll use for 2 weeks during the Olympics, and then for the next 70 years after that, that our state of Utah and our people can benefit.
Park City Mayor Nan Worrell and the rest of the city council expressed excitement about working with the new congressman. Kennedy will be sworn in with the rest of the 119th U.S. Congress on January 3rd.
Good morning. I'm KPCW's Grace Dorfler. Joining us today on Local News Hour is Heber City's Jake Harvath. Jake just got home from the Year of the Mustang, a cross-country road trip on horseback. Jake, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me around.
So to start off, could you tell me a little bit, give me an overview of your trip. How many miles did he travel, and how long does it take to go across the country on horseback?
Right. So the goal of the Year of the Mustang, which we accomplished, was to go 6,000 miles entirely horseback without trailering with the same horses across 25 states while traveling from Utah, hitting the Atlantic Ocean, and then returning all the way back to where we started in Utah. So that was kind of the physical goal of the trip. And that took us 14 months and 10 days.
Wow, that's a long trip. And I understand you had two horses with you?
I had two horses for the majority of the trip, and I had my third horse for about a third of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just in terms of a little bit of background, I saw that your goal with this trip was to raise awareness of wild Mustangs. Tell me a little bit more about that. What was the motivation to do this?
Absolutely. So when I was 15, and I was just a brand new apprentice horse trainer in a facility in Charleston, Utah, and they had a little gray mare Mustang that maybe had 30 days of work on her, not very much, but she had a start, and they didn't have a job for her to do. She was just standing out there for years and years, and they were like, we should give her to Jake, you know, so that they can make something of each other. And she was kind of my start into wild horses and into that Mustang world, because I went on to do everything with her, and then through the people I was around, the trainers that were around me, got inspired to start doing 100-day competitions and training Mustangs to be able to go to homes. The situation is that our federal government is charged with managing wild horses on wild range lands, and the unfortunate fact of that is that means they have to round a number up in order to keep them down to numbers that they're sustainable in the wild, that they aren't eating themselves out of house and home and out competing other species. The problem is, what do you do with all the horses you round up? And these horses will live in pretty poor conditions for the duration of their lives in government holding. These horses are available for adoption to the public. And there can be stigmas about these horses. You know, they are wild animals inherently. And my goal was to show people my horses and what they could accomplish, what they could be trained to do, to get more people interested in that adoption process, to get more of them out of those holding facilities and to be people's partners. So the goal was to show that wild horses could become fantastic working horses and that they actually possessed a lot of qualities that were very desirable.
Mm-hmm. So you took wild horses with you on this trip?
Absolutely. Yep, they were all Mustangs.
Yeah. Could you tell me a little bit about them? I'm sure you have a pretty close bond with your horses after spending more than a year together.
Absolutely, yeah. And that gave me a very unique insight as a horseman, what it was like to be with the same horses 24/7. There was a lot of interesting things that I learned just about horses in general. But my three horses, Bella, Denver, and Eddie, are Bella's 18, Eddie's 13, and Denver's 7. And they're all from different herds around the country. Eddie's from New Mexico. Denver and Bella are from different herds in Nevada. And I had years of experience with Bella, so I was already quite familiar with her. Obviously, our relationship grew even more because we were facing so much more than we ever had before doing a trip like this. With Denver was very young when we left. He was very inexperienced and had a lot to learn. And every time I rode him, he just got better. Every time we were doing a day, you know, he was just soaking it in. And he's a really good horse now. Still got plenty to learn, but he's fantastic. And Eddie, you know, Eddie I found in a rescue in Colorado Springs, and he'd had to overcome some traumatic issues, clearly, that you could tell from his training, and he'd had some injuries in the past. He'd overcome and was completely recovered from, and that's demonstrated by the fact that he walked 6,000 miles, but he had to learn to trust me in a lot of ways. So even though he had plenty of experience being ridden and worked, he had a lot of things to overcome too, which he also just turned into a fantastic trail horse in a lot of ways. And it's hard to explain just the diversity of things that we went through, but it's as simple as all the things we had to overcome, from swimming rivers to you know, being right in line with semi-truck traffic and trains and tractor, all these things, you know, that is unnatural for the horse and that they had to get used to in order to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm. They sound like pretty resilient horses and probably good company for the ride.
Absolutely, yeah. They're my best friends.
Yeah. When did you leave?
I left September 25th of 2023.
Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit about your route. You mentioned you have to be on highways some of the time. How do you decide where to take your horses?
Absolutely. So the overall route, as far as the order of states and everything, it was in mind that we wanted to hit as many states as possible, but we also don't have all the time in the world to get this done. We have the seasons that we have to take into account as well. So the route was largely, the order of things was largely based on that. As far as the day-to-day goes and the ways we actually made it happen, it was largely made as I went along, because we didn't always know where we were staying the next night or three nights ahead, right? So we had to figure that out because the trip and the journey was so extensive and massive and things changed here and there. So the route was often made a day to two, 3 days before. And it was highly consisted of highways, city roads, trails, you know, backcountry farm roads, all sorts of things. It was whatever got us there. It was a huge mix. So it was whatever the environment had to offer. Obviously, we tried to stick to more rural areas because that's just easier on us and on me and the horses. So stay as rural as possible, but be prepared to do whatever you have to do to get through.
Fair enough. And how do you even pack for a trip like that? How do you bring provisions and supplies you need for your horses and yourself?
Right. When I started out this trip, I'd had experience packing in the backcountry. So if anyone's familiar with that, you know, you have everything you need to be able to camp with horses, right? From equipment to stake out for you to be able to sleep outside, food for yourself, maybe grain for them. And you know, whatever clothing you're going to need, right? So it's whatever you need, whatever survival equipment or an emergency equipment you might need. So there's all those things. And then you have all the tack, right? All the saddles, all the halters, all that stuff. So there's all the things you'd need for a particular pack trip. And as I got into this, you know, I got, a few weeks, a month in, you start to realize, you know, there are little things here and there that are actually burdensome and you can learn to do without. So there's a difference between going on a pack trip for 2 weeks and living this way. And I had to learn to live this way ongoing. Mm-hmm. For the sake of my horses. So I was always thinking, how can I get rid of more stuff? What can I get rid of? Get rid of that. Send a box home full of junk. And that was a big key to my success as well, to where I could get down to less and less gear all the time while still keeping the essentials that we'd need to keep on going. You need tools to shoe their feet, right, and keep them in shoes, and that's heavy. So you're always thinking about weight. But at the same time, you do need a significant amount of gear to be able to do something like this.
I bet, yeah. And then along the way, I imagine, you know, it's not an everyday sight to see a gentleman with a couple of horses going across the country. So what kind of feedback did you get from folks that you passed along the way?
It was extremely positive. Just in general, I think you see that sight, and it's such an uncommon thing today in 2024. It brightens people's day up. And we, especially when we were in areas where that would never happen typically. And I remember being a lot of people's first experience with horses, especially out in like the East Coast in New Jersey or in a few other spots that were highly urban that we just happened to need to pass through. So it wasn't just people's first experience with Mustangs. It was people's first experience with horses in general. And that was always fun. But in general, I think we definitely raised a lot of eyebrows, and that just brought more attention to this cause, and it gave me the opportunity to start a lot of conversations about wild horses and open people up to what we were doing. So we stuck out like a sore thumb, and it was the best thing that could have been.
That's really cool. So you got to do some education along the way, and it looks like you kept pretty good track of your journey on Instagram, too. Can you tell me a little bit about the social media part of it?
Absolutely. And to start, that's not my background at all. I'm a colt trainer, I'm a farrier. That's my background was horses. I knew very little about social media and YouTube. And I was only a year prior to going on the trip that I went to my friend who was a professional YouTube editor. And I asked him, hey, do you think this is the sort of thing people would want to watch? And he was like, how could you not, right? You got to put this out there for everyone. And I was like, all right, we're going to figure it out. So I started filming myself shoeing horses. And that was just practice because I knew how much this would take, what a learning curve it was going to be, and it really was. And we made it happen. So we worked out and someone to be able to edit everything, and we brought it to the world every week, put a video out on YouTube, and our following grew over the course of the trip, which was really exciting to see. And I got better at filming, and still am always trying to get better at that so that we can tell a better and better story for everyone. And that was probably my biggest voice, and still is my biggest voice, to be able to talk about wild horses and spark people's interest in them. And yeah, I'm so grateful that we've gone in that direction, and now it's what I'm mostly focusing on just about full time is content creation, and I'm gonna continue to do that.
Oh wow! So now that you're back in Heber, it'll be more horse content.
Yeah, absolutely. We're absolutely including other things, because obviously we're not full-time on a horseback journey, but we're going to do more little trips. We're going to talk about the Western way of life. We're going to talk about ranching and horse training and really get other people's stories that are in that world. So, yeah.
Very nice. Where can people follow you?
So they can go to Jake Harvath on YouTube, or they can go to You're the Mustang on Instagram and Facebook.
Nice. What was the best stop on your trip?
The best stop, that's really hard to pick. Perhaps my favorite moment of the trip was when we hit that ocean in New Jersey. We had New York City in the back, and we got to ride these guys on the beach, ride them in the water, and that was such a fun day. But my favorite day, my favorite just travel day, normal day, was in New Mexico, just out in the back country with all three of the horses packed up. We didn't see a single person all day, and that's my favorite thing, just being out in the middle of the nowhere with these guys, riding, covering country. And it was beautiful. Scenery is beautiful. So it was, that was my favorite day and my favorite moment, I would say, of the trip.
Do horses like to swim?
Some horses do. Yeah. Some are just tolerant, but I've found that most Mustangs like the water. They like to play in the water. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
It's a pretty cool adventure for your horses.
Absolutely.
How do they feel about being back now?
I think they're happy for the rest. I think for, at least for Denver and Eddie, it hasn't really set in. They were gone so long, I kind of wonder if this even feels like home for them. You know, I think home was kind of wherever I was. And for Bella, she's lived there her whole life, so I think she absolutely knows that she's home. I'm just glad for them. I'm happy for them. You know, they were the hardest working horses in America, no doubt. And now they finally got a break after that long, and it was well deserved.
Sounds like it. Tell me a little bit about coming home to the Heber Valley.
That was wonderful. It was funny. The days leading up, you know, everything just got more and more familiar as I got into Utah. Everything was recognizable, and that moment just peaked when I turned the corner around Jordanelle and I could see Timpanogos again, and I could see the valley, and it was that coming home feeling, I think, that everyone kind of has when they're coming home from a trip, you know. So it was exciting. It was fun to be with so many familiar faces again as well.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to Heber.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Anything else you want to add about, you know, advocacy for wild Mustangs, where people can learn more about these horses?
Absolutely. I encourage, you know, everyone who's of means to go look up the Wild Horse and Burro program if you'd be someone interested in adopting a wild horse. If you're someone who's not necessarily qualified to adopt and or train a wild horse, it's just important to know the issues as well, and all that information is there to understand what the balance is, because it is something that affects us on a national level, right? It is something we all are going to have to make decisions about at some point in our lifetimes. So it's important to understand, you know, where these horses are at, that we need to be responsible at managing our lands, but that these horses also have an inherent value that we need to take into account. And if they're going to continue to survive in this modern world, we need to do something about it. So that's what I would say as far as wild horses goes.
Yeah. Well, thanks for all you do to raise awareness, and thanks for sharing a little bit more about your trip, Jake.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. We've been speaking with Jake Harvath of Heber City and his project Year of the Mustang.